down to brass tacks. This person says that they are, look, this situation here with the involving firearms, they say, is serious, and it really needs to be tackled. It's out of hand. The person says, I must express my sincere condolences to the family of the Nutman. That story brought me to tears. And only last week, coming from the doctor with my son, I passed there, having not done so in a very long time, and saw that he was now selling from the opposite side of the road with a van. And having not seen him for a long time, I felt naturally happy for him. I knew him by seeing him there for years. His death has really saddened me. It has touched a lot of people, because when people start to talk about the kind of personality that this young man had, and what you saw there was a man who started out from school, went selling nuts, pride and industry, the kind of stuff, not the highfalutin way that many other people start. You know, these people saw the salt of this earth. Their stories are seldom told until they die like this, you know? But remember, every time we talk about the killings about here, a whole set of you say, don't worry, they're killing out one another. So when they kill out one another, you get collateral damage to her. You remember the woman who was driving up Barbary's Hill going for bread? Collateral damage, all right? Not everybody that is losing their life in this country through gun violence is somebody who is involved in drugs and somebody who went to jail and come out settling scores with somebody else. And if we continue to treat this thing this way, we will have more collateral damage, and we are all in it together. We are all vulnerable. But you know what? It is true to say that this country, perhaps it is like no other. But you only get action when a name that is prominent is caught up in it. When a prominent name becomes collateral damage and it touches those who are in positions of real power and influence, then you hear, we need to do this and we need to do that. You know what happens? They do it for 2 weeks. And then they go back to the norm. This is a real serious issue here. I mean, there is so much of this that we have to be reporting as a station over this past year. Last year was terrible. This year, it seems as though it's almost as bad. And we're getting involved in a lot of other things, you know, tossing all these different issues up in the air. But that one, reaching the point where it seems as though people are starting to become a bit mute on it, but it's serious. Down to brass tacks, hello?
This chink matter may be bigger than we think.
Tell me.
A young lady from New York called me a few months back and told me that chinks moved from an apartment next to her mother's into hers, and then she had to get a full job done cleaning out those checks in her apartment. But there's a young man here who burnt a bed not long ago because he found chinks in that bed, which were apparently brought in to Barbados from New York. New York right now is full of chinks. And every bag, every box, every barrel, every container coming here through New York should be suspected of chink infestation. The two schools that were mentioned recently may just be the tip of the iceberg.
I really thank you very much for drawing that matter to our attention. You see, the concern I have sometimes when people raise these issues is that we come to conclusions without enough information. It is like the first caller who's saying, oh, it's the buses. Well, maybe on the buses too, yes. But as you say, it doesn't begin there.
No.
And in as much as we are in an environment where we are importing so much from elsewhere, things come here that, you know, we wouldn't really want to have here after all.
I know this young lady very well. I knew her for many years. I knew the mother for many years as well. And they have no connection whatsoever with the young man who burnt the bed recently because of chink infestation.
So I have this piece here from out of New Jersey. And it says that exterminators in that particular area say that they have been busier since the coronavirus pandemic started due to an alarming rise in cases of bed bugs. They say one reason for the increase is that residents have been reluctant to let the exterminators into their homes since the COVID pandemic started. So you have less activity in that regard, and therefore an upsurge in the number of bed bugs in the United States, or that part of the United States.
The health department need to look at this matter with closer vigilance.
Well, people in their own homes too, and in office. People in homes and offices need to look at it very carefully.
It is much bigger than we think.
Yes, all right. Well, thanks for drawing it to our attention. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm just called to... I made an observation at the garrison, Savannah, where they're digging some 20... some pretty deep holes, I guess, maybe for the lights or so. And they're just covering them with pallets, and in some cases, it looks like plywood. There are quite a number of children who use the garrison to play, and footballers, etc. I think if they can use like steel plates, perhaps, also to cover these holes, this would be quite adequate, because it could be very dangerous, although they have the yellow tape and the pallets. You know, if one just miss and run, and, you know, children, you can't predict them, you see? So I just got to make that observation, all right?
Okay, thank you very much. Hello?
Hello.
Hi, welcome.
Good day, sir. I'm on air.
You are.
Yeah, thank you. I want to make a reply to a statement I heard yesterday by a gentleman known as Wesley in respect of Colin Spencer and when he ran for the office here in St. George North. He was saying that Colin Spencer had done so well that he almost beat Glenn Clark. But according to my record, it's not true. Colin Spencer won two boxes only in St. George North. And he had run in 2008. But I could tell you that Glenn lost his first outing in 1991. And came back in 1994 and he beat a lady known as Antoinette Thompson, who is now deceased. In 1994, he lost her deposit. I'm on the point. He beat Patrick Carter in 1999. He lost his deposit. He's also a deceased, but he did not come back. In 2003, he beat Desmond Brown. Desmond Brown got 1,447 votes to 3,398 votes. And in 2008, he beat Colin Spencer. 1,447 votes to 3,309 votes. 69.58% to 30.42%. The only person, and none of those people I mentioned to you come back a second time. The next person who ran in 2013 was Jack Inns. He ran in 2013, he ran in 2018. He's the only body that gets over 1,500 votes with Glenn Clark. He got 2,391 votes. In 2013 to 3,508 votes to Glenn Clark. And he came back in 2018 and got 600 votes.
So the question here is this. Is this a Glenn Clark seat or is this a BLP seat?
I believe it's both. Glenn Clark was so renowned to this constituency that I could say, I know of people who said, man, I voted for you, man, everyone wants. And Glenn turned up the next day and said, how are you going, man? I said, Glenn got vote. That's the person Glenn was. And I believe
so it is more, while you say to me that it is both BLP and Glenn Clark,
yes,
you also must concede that it comes across as though it was heavily personality-driven, too.
Yes, it has a lot of personality-driven. Glenn was a pleasant person. And like I told the lady who was on the air, I think it was Tuesday or so, the lady who said Dr. Hines, I think she is. I said to her that Glenn had done more in St. George North in my lifetime than any other politician representing any other constituency in Barbados. And this is a given fact. I have seen in my lifetime Glenn made roads that I never thought there would ever be a road. This is really true. But the lady said to me, he had a long time to do it. I said to Dan, true. He 10 years get cut off. 10 years get cut off. At the Glebe in St. George, Glenn had started the pavilion for George Park Cricket Club. Quite a number of disciplines, rugby and all those things there. Mm.
Well, and this isn't the time and place for us to recite all of his successes. But I take your point. You wanted to correct something which was said earlier, and we've given you the opportunity to do so. All right.
But I want to say that Glenn is there for the lady, and he's going to work with her. And I am.
Well, that's for you and the Labour Party to sort out in terms of the political campaign. That this is not our opportunity to do that. Usually, when the political parties want to take that kind of line, they usually got to pay for it. So I thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. The Transport Board is making it clear that they have been spraying and disinfecting the terminals continuously and have found no evidence of bed bugs, Mr. P. No evidence of bed bugs. And I can assure you, the person who sent me this, Mr. P, has found no evidence of them either. Okay? Down to brass tacks. 1121, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good morning, sir.
How are you?
I'm well, and you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Yes.
I wish that my problem was bed bugs. I'm not in any way, being flippant in relation to those creatures because there's a problem, but I wish that was my problem. My problem, though, is much bigger, and it's the problem of crime in Barbados. You and I would have had a couple of conversations about crime. We would have debated how many murders for the year last year and vis-a-vis the year before and that kind of stuff. But what really I think we need to focus very critically on is if these reports of crime are getting out to our international credit rating agencies, and I think that's the time that we have to, if that is what is going to make us sit up, I think, it is unfortunate. Because I'm reading a story here that was in the Nation newspaper where the International Credit Rating Agency, AM Best, they were speaking on Barbados' high level of economic and financial risks in relation to local insurers. And what caught my attention was this part. They said on the political front, the firm said increased violent crime and the murder rate were growing concerns. They were quite easy on the social and political unrest because they say that usually, peters out. But when the international rating agencies, at least when one, because they don't want to be necessarily sensational, when one is going to make a reference to violent crime and murder rate in Barbados, I think that's where we have to sit up. We cannot afford to allow international institutions to start aligning Barbados's success or non-success to a crime situation. In Jamaica, those people, there's murderers. In Trinidad, it's the same thing. And I am concerned that the authorities, whoever they may be, because I don't want to be accused of being political, whoever they may be, need to pay attention to what is happening in Barbados. Because it is not becoming like, okay, well, he dead. And I would want to, I don't want to say pay tribute, but I would want to acknowledge, you know, the death of that young man, you know, who used to sell his nuts, you know, there by that T junction there. And you can imagine someone there for so many years, almost 20 years ago, doing that kind of business. I used to always admire him for being there by himself, you know, selling these nuts. And now to hear that he's been shot by a bullet through his temple or whatever it was. So all I'm saying, Mr. Ellis, is that we really have to take this crime thing seriously.
I think we are, but we don't know what to do.
Why
the society doesn't know what to do. It doesn't.
Okay. So we just run about like a headless
chicken. There are people who give you the impression that they have answers. They talk in a manner that is supposed to instill confidence. But if after that you come up against a situation where immediately after there's another and another and another, that undermines confidence. We don't have an answer. And I'll tell you that you can go back over many years. You can go back to the period when the Labour Party was last in office. You could go back to the period when the Democratic Labour Party was in office before them. All back then, we were discussing crime, especially violent crime, and the need to stem it. I am saying to you, based upon what I have seen over the years, Barbados really has no answer right now.
But Mr. Ellis, there was an answer. Well, I don't know if it was an answer, but there was a drastic attempt. There was an attempt at drastically...
With what success?
Sorry?
With what success?
No, just wait a minute. There was an attempt recently, and I see the thing about it is that I do not like to go down the party line because then people would say that one body is talking thing. But the last administration introduced through the Police Act, it was making some amendments to the Police Act where they would have given the police a number of, they would give the police the authority to get to the root of this crime. And the Democratic Labour Party was accused of trying to create a police state. And since you drew the attention to the fact that this problem of crime stretched way back down, way, way, way years ago, it would mean then that anybody who wanted to curb the crime would have to introduce drastic measures. So here you had a last party, who was trying to introduce stringent measures, and then they were being accused of creating the police state. So now the irony of the whole thing is that up comes the new government, and the first year we had 49 murders, and this second year now we're rushing headlong down to maybe either breaking that record or equaling it. So it means there is a way we can deal with the crime, but maybe what the politicians have to do is to stop making it a partisan issue. Because there is no way, Mr. Ellis, that I would feel intimidated if I'm coming from St. Andrew and a policeman stopped me and asked me to look into my bonnet. I would not feel any way about that.
Well,
especially given
I would only say to you that this government has 29 seats. It has a constitutional majority. Mm. So if it was unconstitutional to do certain things, it can make a case for constitutional change. All right?
Of course.
But I will say to you that I think that it's simplistic for us to believe that by itself is a solution to the problem. The problem is complex, multifaceted.
And this is what
you to believe that you are going to solve this problem just by roadblocks and that sort of thing, I don't believe it.
No, you're not going to solve it, Mr. Ellis, by that, but you're going to make sure that the criminal element, you know, has to be more creative. And you've always drew reference to, you know, the police has to be more involved at community level. You know, there's a lot of what we know would accept as normal illegal behavior. People riding with bikes without lights, they're riding without the wheelie, they do this, they break major light, they break major stops. These things are things that you have to nip in the bud. I do not understand why it is that since we are talking about going to be a republic, I do not understand why it is that since we became independent, things that we really adhere to in terms of law and order, since our independence, we seem to throw them through the window. You know, there was a time that after 6:30, you had to have lights on your vehicle. There was a time when a postman could not be seen with a postman bag on his motorbike after a certain time. You know, I mean, all of these things have been thrown out through the window. Children could not have ridden bicycles without the reflector lights. But these things now have become, you know, the norm. Therefore, we have to get back to that. I agree 100% that we have to know to get back to letting that child who is running about the road on nights without a bicycle, a light with a bicycle, to go home.
Can we? Who's going to do that? Who's going to send the police?
Yeah.
You depend upon the police to do things like that? Do you really?
I'm going to say, if the police is allowed to do it, the parents would have to cooperate because the police would then get that child back.
Unlike you, I do not have any faith in getting back there. I think that to me is not going to happen. Well, not from all that. Look, this whole issue of clamping down on minor crime as a means of trying to deal with major crime is something that New York City did. All right?
But that's a different concept. The problem is that I think it's the windows. I can't remember the name of it now.
This is a broken windows syndrome or something.
And that really was something that was against the background of different cultural expressions. You had black people.
It is against the backdrop of different cultural situation. But at the end of the day, the principle remains the same. I've had policemen, former policemen here, talk about the way that they used to solve crime by dealing with minor issues years ago. All right? Because that idea, for instance, of the guy who rides up the one-way street, stopped, you discover something else. But our society will do that for a week, and then it's done. You know, I don't know what is happening. I do not know at the core what has happened within the police force of Barbados over the years, how it has changed. I hear them complaining about a shortage of personnel. I hear them talking about the number of people who are off sick. Most likely they might be having motivational issues like the person who wrote this earlier said that they were suffering. Yeah. So, but to get the police to be far more proactive in those areas, then you have to have a better appreciation of what their issues are and what their challenges have been.
They have to get the support of the court too, because it doesn't make sense taking somebody for something and then demanding or whoever tell them to go along with whatever. But let me quickly.
I just don't have no faith in it. Tell you the truth. Fundamentally, I say to you, I don't, given all the talk that I hear about here over the years and where we are today, somebody got to show me something special that has happened for me to believe that we are going to go and get anywhere with this.
But let me just compliment Mr. Johnson. I'm not going to quote him because he usually, I won't say usually, but you tend to sometimes be accused of not quoting him correctly. So I would just generally say that I would like to compliment him when he said that the media taken the entertainment out of, taken the education out of radio, and therefore there are a lot of things that can happen in the society.
Have taken what?
The education, you know, before the motto of the whatever it was, entertainment, education, and something, you know,
whereby education.
Dennis will go out and explain that to me at some point.
Right, it was a long thing. It was a long thing he talked about, but the culture, taking records, and you know the archives and whatever. It was a spiel that it was.
I would love to have an exchange with him on that here, because at the end of the day, you know, a lot has changed, but there's a lot of scope for people who work in media to do more. That's the truth.
But I think that I'm not speaking for Dennis, so I don't want him to say I'm speaking.
He's
him,
next door. He could tell. He's upstairs as my producer, so he could tell me exactly what he was saying. I would love to engage him on it at some point. We perhaps should have a special program on that.
Right, but that's what I got from him, that he would like to see more educational programs where people would be about the history, about what young people are learning about the history and that kind of stuff, and using songs to put things in perspective and whatnot. And I thought that was an excellent input, you know, when he was talking sometime last week. All right,
I didn't hear it, so I'm at a disadvantage. But
okay, fair enough. That's why I didn't want to call him.
Perhaps you see something like that is worthy of having a kind of special focus program where, yeah, you can actually look at some of the music itself and then have that examination of where we are and why we are where we are as well. That's a crucial part of it.
Right, just using music for to give us a nice, put it in a nice historical, to teach children in a way that it wouldn't be boring to them. Because when you listen to the calypso, when you listen to pop music, those things.
Yeah, there's a lot of scope for that to be done, even as we speak. There's a lot of scope.
I'm not in your company, so therefore I wouldn't.
My company is not my company alone. Well, We're talking about media in general.
Well, fair enough.
All right, so thanks. All right. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Yes.
Somebody says not all wrong at NIS. Dear moderator, I made a call to NIS after 3 p.m. A lady called Kathy Williams answered me. She gave me some of the information I requested. I'm wanting more details. She asked me for my email address and promised and sent me the information. Scrolling through my phone later that night, to my surprise, Ms. Williams had responded within the same hour I had called. To Ms. Williams, I say, continue to let your light shine. Thank you very much, Kathy Williams. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Yes, David.
Yes, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good. I wanted to weigh in relation to two of the matters that have been on the ideas this morning, which is the bed bug. I think that it is the Ministry of Health's duty to also inform the public so that there is a better consciousness of what to be aware of in relation to these things. Because that caller that made the enlightenment in relation to it being a more of an international problem, I think that was a good input, and that we need to be more aware. Because part of the problem is that if the Ministry of Health is aware that there are bed bugs in a specific area, like a village or a housing area, they are not going to make that public knowledge, because it could have the impact of making people feel that the area is a problem.
Seriously, how old are you?
I am 56, sir.
All right. So you know about the periods when we had bed bugs all over the place?
Yes.
And at that time, yes. I didn't think that Barbados was looking at it in the way that I hear people talk about it now. I suppose a lot of it is influenced by the fact that some of these people who see bed bugs, seeing them for the first time. And therefore, they're blowing this thing out of all proportion. You know, perhaps for them, it is the fact that they are seeing so many of them at any one time, wherever they have been spotted. But there was a time in this country when chink infestation was pretty widespread in many areas of the country. And people weren't running all about the place saying, chinks after me.
Right, because there was not this clamor to stop working as soon as there are those things around. You see, we have become very, what I would say, we become very what we call environmentally conscious. And now everybody has to go home. So it is almost like a actually stigmatize the thing so much that it becomes more than it really is.
They are shocked. Mm-hmm. They are shocked by it. I'll give you an example of the kind of change that has taken place. I was talking with someone yesterday evening or day before, and this question of Tony Moore running for the Labour Party came up. And they said to me that another person much younger was in a state of shock. They couldn't believe that a trade union leader could make that transition. But that was because of their youth and inexperience. They are so young that they wouldn't, even though they have, you know, matured in academically and all of that, at the end of the day, they haven't been exposed to that before. So as a result, hearing that for the first time comes like a jolt to them. And there are a lot of people, younger people, who would be facing that same issue.
Exactly.
The same thing applies to the sight of bed bugs. Now, if I saw bed bugs, I remember seeing bed bugs as a child. So that's not going to scare me the way it will scare somebody who's never seen them before.
That's right. All right.
So you can go in a hotel room and find them too, tell you the truth. Not only, you can go in a hotel room elsewhere, out of Barbados, and find bed bugs.
That's right. Yes, it doesn't have any gender neutral matter. It doesn't, you know, it's specific to
terrain or geographical area.
That's right.
This woman says she's 65 and she's never seen a bed bug. She says that she's heard about them, though. But, you know, chances are that if you're 65 years old and you've never seen a bed bug, then it says to me that you most likely grew up in middle and upper class circumstances in Barbados or wherever you were. Yeah. But those of us who came from the lower echelons of this society knew about bed bugs. All right?
Yeah. Yes. So, David, the other matter now relates to crime in Barbados and the death of the young man who we could set a good example of what young people can be from the testimony that has been rendered in relation to him and what we that passed there and seen him operating could say in relation to him. And therefore, it makes it, as you said, that we are all susceptible to being vulnerable to this.
Of course.
Situation. Now, as a person living here and want to see the best for our country, I'm also very Caribbean conscious. I have a sister living in Trinidad and a daughter living in Jamaica. I am very aware of what is happening in each one of these places. And what I think we have to fix on is something that we are playing with all the time and wouldn't deal with. That is how we translate this 11-plus exam to secondary school. So the problem is not the exam itself. The problem is the allocation to secondary schools where the perception of failure is passed on to children and made endemic. It has become a cultural poison, if we may put it that way, where you are 50, 60 years old and you are going for a job and somebody's asking you where you went to school. Really? I mean, what does it have to do with it? But we have become so entrained in this thing about where you went to school that our human resource talent of the country has been damaged by the thought that you failed at 11. You cannot fail at 11 years old for life. And we must change this.
Well, you are part of that school that will continue to look exclusively at this issue of education as the factor behind what we are seeing in the country. I see that as part of it. I see what is happening in homes as a major part of it. I believe that gender conflict in this country is part of it. I believe that the economic structure of Barbados is part of it. I see a mix of factors that are influencing that behavior.
No, I would agree with you, and I would not deny what you're saying. But I can tell you that this is in large part what creates.
Well, but you are bold to say that in large part it is. I mean, you can go to school and not necessarily emerge with all these certificates and stuff like that, or you can emerge with these certificates and do what the Nutman did, to go there and start something from scratch and emerge as a small entrepreneur and move from small to medium. And some people in other countries are, you know, on the basis of scale, can become even bigger than that. You know, but if you go to school and you do not have an education, you come out with little or nothing, many people have no job to turn to. It's difficult to find something to do. The easiest thing to turn to for some of them is to sell drugs. That's what they're doing.
Right. But
all right.
The most critical aspect is not what they turn to. The most critical aspect is how they feel about themselves. And this is why I am fixing on the matter. It has nothing to do with the qualification. It is how you feel about yourself. If you believe you have failed and therefore you are not competent to find what you are good at, confident to find what you are good at, that is the destroying point. That, you see, if you go to...
challenge is to be able to come up with a plan of action that will be able to address that. And until we are able to tackle some of those issues, not have the politicians believe that they are the ones who have the answers, but that the politicians ought to create as best as they can an environment where the science is driving the process. This is, to some extent, I would suggest to you that it is akin to dealing with the COVID thing. Once the politicians get involved and believe that they have to achieve their particular political objectives, they often ignore signs and recommendations and positions that can take you there, but it takes you longer to get there. So in the quest to try to come before the public and say, I can tick off this as an achievement and that as an achievement, they don't actually solve the problem. What they do is that they tell you that they have built this and they have built that, or they have created this post and they have created that post. At the end of the day, there are no figures on what that has translated into, but what you go walk away with is the idea that they've done this and they've done that.
So, David, at the end of the day, right, we keep on fixing on politicians, but the dialogue that me and you are having is what is critical.
Somebody has to implement it, though.
Yeah, but people will implement when numbers are carried. Numbers are the thing.
Well,
people being carried.
Forgive
is the
me.
Thing. So if you,
Forgive me, but I don't hold. Based on what I'm seeing, I don't expect it can happen. And you may say to me, somebody can say to me, you know, you're a national figure right now, and you should be giving people hope. Well, that's true. But I should be able to give you hope on the basis of successes that I have seen after, 3 to 4 decades of hearing people come on the call-in program and say all that you're saying right now.
But, sir...
Nothing has come of it.
But that don't mean that change can't come.
Well, show me how.
If we go that route, I understand your feeling, you know, because you've been beaten down. But, sir, change can come. Look, what we have to embrace is that...
You don't need to convince me anymore. I have heard you, and I have you in the same category as these 40-something-year-old people who are on the stage right now telling Barbadians what they think needs to be done to solve the problems, and the same things that they are saying are the same things that I heard 30 years ago from people in their age group. Nothing seems to change in these areas. All we are good at is talk. The crime situation cries out for far more than that.
But, sir, it what it required is for a change of mind.
Girl, let me hear how you can get changed. How you can change your mind?
So, you see this dialogue here. You're
having. This can change your mind.
But listening and thinking. Now, if you look at your child and you see it beautiful, and you think that because it is not academically sound, that you are still going to make sure that it finds what its core competence is, or what it is good at, and point the child in that direction, you will win the battle. If you, however,
well, you gotta start by stop telling the child you just let you whatever far. You see, all of this. You gotta start by dealing with the kind of language that exists out there within this society that, far from empowering a young male, is pulling him down and dragging him down and making him feel that he's nobody. Because whenever he turns and he looks around in this society, he's being told there's somebody else out there who's far better than you. You are nobody. If you got that in your head, you think you're gonna go somewhere. That's part of the reason why we ain't going anywhere. This is Down to Brass Tacks.